Prepare to dive into the forefront of healthcare innovation at our 14th annual meeting coming up on April 8th through 11th at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago, with thousands of industry leaders converging over four dynamic days of discussions on crucial topics from health IT to executive leadership. It's where the future of healthcare takes shape. We can't wait to connect with you in person and engage in these important conversations.
Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, made for the people who power U.S. healthcare. I'm Molly Gamble with Becker's, and today I'm sitting down with Reid Steffen, Vice President and Chief Information Officer with St. Luke's Health System, to learn more about his role and his top priorities as of late. Reid, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for being my guest. How are you today, and where does the podcast find you?
Yeah, hi, Molly. Well, it's a Friday afternoon, so I'm doing great. I typically work from home on Fridays, which I'm doing today, so I find myself in the comfort of my own home office.
That's terrific. Well, Reid, for listeners who might be a little less familiar with St. Luke's Health System, can you share a few key facts about the organization just to help us better reacquaint ourselves?
Sure. St. Luke's Health System, we're based in Boise, Idaho. We were founded in 1902. We serve as Idaho's only not-for-profit health system. What that means is we're comprised of 8 medical centers, a children's hospital. We have over 200 clinics staffed by about 14,000 employees. As part of our system, we also have a financially and clinically integrated network that we call St. Luke's Health Partners. We have a health insurance arm that we call St. Luke's Health Plan. And as a system, our focus is not just healthcare, but also the overall well-being of our patients and the broader population in the communities that we serve.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Reid. And the only nonprofit health system in the state. I mean, that's a distinction to point out. I remember at the start of 2020, an interesting year, we at Becker's reported that you were beginning to lead the centralization of the IT team at St. Luke's. You all were moving into one physical location after your members had been spread across 7 different buildings for a number of years. I wanted to check in, about 4 years later through the woods of the pandemic. How's your team today? How many members are part of the IT team today? How are you working together today? Can you share the latest?
Yeah, you have a good memory. 4 years, it's been a wild 4 years. So you're right. At the start of 2020, we were about ready to move into a centralized corporate location for our IT staff who were spread across multiple various locations across the valley and the areas where we serve. And then the pandemic hit. And so that really caused some disruption and a reassessment of what the approach is going to be. I would say, as we look back through kind of the forest, as you described, we've learned a lot on our journey. I think early on, we intentionally really avoided extreme positions. We would hear some extreme position of, hey, remote work is fake work. Everyone needs to be in the office. The other extreme would be, hey, let's cancel all of our leases, sell our buildings. Everyone can work remotely. We just felt both of those were problematic, kind of too wild of a swing either direction. And so we were patient, we listened, we tried small tests of change. I think where we've landed, we have about 550 folks across our department. 10% of those are dedicated remote. That means that their primary work location is their home. They can still come in the office, but if they do, they sit in a hoteling spot, and they're predominantly, these folks work from home and stay at home. We have about 10% of our staff who are required to be on site. It's just the nature of their work. They can't do it remotely. They have equipment or services they provide that require them to be there present. And then about 80% of our department are hybrid. And so as a guide, we ask our leaders, the people, to be in the office 3 days a week. And then we ask all other staff to be in the office at least 1 day a week. And outside of that, we don't monitor or prescribe how our teams operate. We fully embrace the benefits of flexibility, but I would also say that because we operate within a defined geographic area, it's beneficial to have in-person interaction. And so we try and maintain a culture and events that pull people into the office so we can maintain that in-person connection that's really key to creating the culture that I think is our secret sauce.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you not only avoided those extreme positions, like you said, of either, you know, like you said, cancel all the leases, we're selling the buildings, or everyone in every, you know, 5 days a week, but you've also embraced the hybrid situation and then even customized even more by having those bookends with the 10% fully remote, 10% in person, and then from there, 80% in the middle somewhere. How has that been it for you as a leader? You know, that's a lot of different employees, making sure you're being thoughtful in your communication, reaching people where they are. Any adjustments you need to make as the top of this team?
Well, I think you have to be more intentional about ensuring equity of connection and access. And so I'm mindful of wanting to avoid presence bias. So just because I'm in the office usually 4 days a week. And for those colleagues that are in the office at a high percentage as well, and I have maybe more FaceTime with, I want to make sure that myself and other leaders avoid any unintentional weighting of a preference of assignment or opportunity just based on that higher frequency of in-person interaction. And so I'll do, you know, every other week I host what I call a CIO small group meeting where it's virtual, and just try and bring together a small number of folks on the team, usually 15 to 20, just to check in and have those connections. Like I mentioned, we try and do things, whether it's an office event or just doubling up on a work item that might have brought people in anyway to the office, but to make sure when we have those moments that we really intentionally try and round and make sure that we create those connections as effectively as possible. But it is something that you have to be intentional about. That kind of mindful connection won't just happen organically. There has to be some thought and some level of structure around it.
And those meetings, those CIO small groups meetings, like it's about 10% of your team, 15 to 20 people, are weekly, like you said?
I do about two a month. And I find when I do it that way, I can work through the department in about a year.
Oh, wow.
And that's a pretty good pace. We started it 4 years ago, and it was initially really a reaction and a response to COVID when the majority of our staff were full-time remote as we kind of learned how to navigate that event or that experience. But we found that beyond the, you know, immediate need of doing that to stay connected during COVID, there was a lot of utility and benefit to maintain that long-term. And the feedback from staff has been positive as well. It gives them a smaller, intimate kind of gathering to ask questions that maybe they would be hesitant to ask in an all-hands meeting. It lets them connect and get to know other members of the department that maybe they don't work with on a regular basis. So there's been some unintended benefit from that format that really has been powerful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much, Reed, for the check-in on your team. Now, I would love to know a little bit more about your work as of late. Any initiatives or areas of your work that are commanding the most of your attention or energy lately?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we're fully embracing, of course, the opportunities that generative AI are presenting. I think we've found our path by aligning with our partners and leveraging their roadmaps. So, for example, we're piloting Epic's AI in baskets. We're using Microsoft Copilot. We're deploying an ambient listening solution for clinicians. A lot of things that are, I think, talked about at a pretty high level of frequency and recurrence in the community. But I would say, though, that for me, a more seemingly mundane area has really captured my attention over the last several months. And I found myself increasingly trying to advocate for how do we highlight and celebrate those who are just being brilliant in the basics. I certainly understand the appeal of showcasing the innovative approaches people are taking in the new and emerging areas, but I always, in the back of my mind, I have this nagging worry that it creates a mindset where the basics can then be overlooked or even devalued. Mm-hmm. So I fully embrace this mantra that excellence in the essentials is the unsung hero of healthcare transformation. So right now, my team, we're on a journey of assessing the basics to really understand where are we brilliant or where do we think we're brilliant, but maybe we're not, And where are we just okay? Or maybe where are we not okay? And so on the surface, that kind of work, it doesn't seem very exciting. It's certainly not going to, you know, be a headline of a LinkedIn post or a podcast episode that grips people. But I'm convinced that it's critical. And in our quest for transformation or innovation, the strongest launch pad is going to be that solid foundation. And my premise is that if we lose sight of that, we end up building on a sandy foundation that just can't withstand the natural tides of our dynamic world. So we're just really focused on doubling down on, again, how do we assess and make sure that we're really brilliant and efficient at the basics?
Mm-hmm. Well, Reed, I think you might have gotten the wrong podcast host, because I love that topic. I would like to do podcasts and LinkedIn posts on it. Are you a basketball fan by chance?
I am.
Okay. The Last Dance, that Bulls documentary that came out, and I remember watching that, and it kind of, the way the team was about the fundamentals of the game. I found it so inspiring and interesting. And it reminds me a lot of what you're saying, where you can have the shiny ball syndrome, but if you let the fundamentals lag or you lose steam there and focus, it's tough to do much of anything really, really well, if, you know, even much less exceptionally well. So I completely understand why you find this so compelling and interesting.
Yeah, are you a football fan, if we stick with the sports analogy?
I like football, not as much as basketball, though. But yes, please continue.
Well, I just think of Vince Lombardi, the legendary Packers coach, mm-hmm. and they were so successful. And every season, even after they won the championship or the first of their Super Bowls early on, at the start of the year, he would gather the team and say, gentlemen, this is a football. And he'd hold the football. Gentlemen, this is the end zone. Gentlemen, this is the field goal post, like just breaking it down to the basics. And that was the key to their success, is they never got so carried away with, well, we've got that figured out. Let's work on something really advanced and like cutting edge. And I think that same mindset maps beautifully to what we do. And I'm not dismissing or saying we shouldn't be looking at what's new and emerging and how can we leverage it, but all within the context of, it only works if, again, we are brilliant to the basics and we really understand what we're building on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Reed, I want to wish you continued success in that effort. I think it's really important, and I find it quite interesting to discuss. So keep us posted at Becker's with how that's going. I also think there's a lot of different leadership techniques that are really imperative to that kind of work, because like you said, it can seem mundane, but if you lead it the right way, it can be really effective.
Well, I just love what you do then. And I love that as kindred spirits, that does grip you, because I think, and I have colleagues who are brilliant at the basics. And as we highlight and showcase that, it creates a rising tide, right? Where people then don't feel, and not that they do, these are my words, but no one should ever feel ashamed or like, well, I'm just doing that, right? I'm not doing some new cutting edge robotic surgery. And there's a place for all of it, and we can celebrate it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great spirit. Reed Steffen, Vice President and CIO of St. Luke's Health System. Any closing thoughts for our listeners or a message you'd like to end on, Reed?
Yeah, I would, you know, if you'll let me kind of wax philosophical for a moment, I would say, as a healthcare CIO community, we best serve our organizations and our sector by focusing on the primary questions and not the secondary questions. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, so for me, a secondary question is something like, what should my title be? Should it be Chief Information Officer? Should it be Chief Digital and Information Officer? Who should I report to? Should it be the CEO? Do I need to be a member of President's Cabinet? Those are all secondary questions. Primary questions are things like, do I really know what all of my mission critical applications are? And do I really understand their interdependencies? Or do I really know who all of the third parties are who have access to our systems and data and what their relative level of risk is? And so the further I get in my career, the more I kind of double down on this position that if you focus on answering the primary questions, the secondary questions take care of themselves, usually in the form of realizing that they don't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
I love that. That's to keep those priorities in check. And it's not to say, and I'm gleaning this from your remarks, Reed, but it's not to say that people are going to be hell-bent on secondary versus primary. But I think sometimes, whether it's just you're having one of those weeks or you're kind of looking more toward, like you said, the structure, the councils, the titles, it can happen. And it takes strong leadership to help make sure that people are really keeping their eye on the ball and focusing on those primary questions, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Reed, it has been a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you so much for your time, for wrapping up your week with me and visiting. I hope we can do so again soon.
Thanks, Molly.